Welcome to the 287th episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I'm your host, Randy Winograd. In this edition of the podcast, our topics are a review of Patrick's weekend predictions, a look back at week 11 action in college football and week 10 action in the NFL, a look back at the last week of NBA action, and our first weekly review of college basketball action. So with that full agenda, let's jump right in with a look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, which are posted every Thursday on our website, 4thand24.com. We will start in college football, where Patrick went 3-1 with his weekend predictions. Similarly, in the NFL, Patrick went 3-1 with his weekend predictions. In the NBA, Patrick went 2-2 with his weekend predictions. And in college basketball, Patrick also went 3-1 with his weekend predictions. That brings Patrick's week record for the week to 11-5, and his overall record to 1,165-741. That is an overall winning percentage of 61.1%. Patrick, your thoughts on your weekend predictions?
Well, it's the start of my favorite season, not only to watch, but to predict, obviously, with college basketball, excuse me. And the end of college football season is always fun, too, especially in the November month. But yeah, I figured I would do better this week. You know, as I always say, the later it gets in the season with football, the easier it is to kind of judge who actually is a real contender, who's going to win those tough matchups. Some teams, you know, are ranked very high at the beginning of the season because of preseason expectations, and then you know, they take a loss, but you think they might bounce back, and then they all of a sudden lose to a team that really shouldn't be beating them if they were what we thought they were preseason. And I think a perfect example of that is Georgia getting dominated by Ole Miss. I don't think that Ole Miss is really, I don't think that Ole Miss is a championship contender, I think is the way to put it. I do think they're a playoff team. At the start of the year, I thought they were a top five team in the country, but they haven't played up to that level at any point this year. So even though that's what I thought preseason, I don't still think that. Yet at the same time, I picked Ole Miss to beat number three Georgia, which they did 28-10, because Carson Beck has just looked not good at all. I mean, he said it at the beginning of the year, and it's been repeated on the broadcast. His three goals were to win a national title, win the Heisman, and get drafted in the first round. There is zero chance of all three of those things happening. There's frankly like a 1% chance of two of those things happening. And the only one that's any bit realistic is Georgia winning the national title off the back of its defense. If he can just get back to even a decent playing level, but he hasn't shown that all season long. Then number 23, Clemson won on the road, beat Virginia Tech 24-14. Wasn't maybe the most interesting game of the week, but there were a lot of games of unranked teams versus highly ranked teams that were supposed to be closer games within a touchdown kind of a line. I thought it was disrespectful to pick BYU against Utah, given the fact that even though the spread was smaller, BYU was a top 10 team and Utah was 4-4 heading into the game. So it felt a little more right to pick a matchup kind of in this range. That's also why I picked number 24 Missouri against Oklahoma. Missouri won 30-23. Coach Drinkwitz said it kept their playoff hopes alive. That's absolutely not true, but it's fine because South Carolina will beat them by two touchdowns this weekend anyway. And those two games I got right, and then the game I got wrong was the other SEC clash between number 11 Alabama and number 15 LSU. I thought LSU would be able to capture that win that they've really, the big win that they've needed under Brian Kelly for his entire tenure, and they weren't able to do it. And not only were they not able to do it, they didn't even keep this game close. They gave up four rushing touchdowns to Jalen Milroe. Just a terrible game by LSU. But credit to Alabama for going on the road to Baton Rouge and winning that game. Then in the NFL, the Chiefs beat the Broncos 16-14 off the blocked field goal. I'm sure everybody's seen that. The Niners beat the Buccaneers 23-20 off of a long field goal of their own that actually went in. The Lions beat the Texans off of a long field goal of their own. And then the Steelers beat the Commanders off a vintage Russell Wilson comeback drive, which haven't seen that in forever. But frankly, you know, the way it's looking, Russ might actually still have a little bit left in him. I mean, there's some older quarterbacks that don't have anything left in them, cough, cough, Aaron Rodgers, that people still seem to believe in for I don't know what reason. But maybe it's time to start looking at Russell Wilson on the Steelers and think that maybe he still has what it takes to at least win a playoff game. I think it's possible. You know, the Commanders are a good team, obviously, 7-2 heading into this game. So a good win for the Steelers. And I think I saw somewhere that Russell Wilson is already like two or three touchdowns away from the most passing touchdowns by a Steeler quarterback in the season since Ben Roethlisberger retired, despite the fact that he's only played like four or five games, which is just hilarious to me. But it's a credit to what he's been doing. And that was the only prediction I got wrong this week. And then in the NBA, the Clippers beat the Kings 107-98. I got that one wrong. Then the Nuggets beat the Mavericks 122-120. I got that one right. The Warriors beat the Thunder 127-116. Got that wrong. And then the Pacers beat the Knicks 132-121. Of course, most of these more important for overall season takeaways that are actually going to swing everything, less so the actual impact of one little game on the season. But of course, still important to note the fact that these games happened early on. But then college basketball, that's the story where I think you actually have these games that really impact these teams long term. You know, the Pacers beat the Knicks last on Sunday, but the Knicks already beat the Pacers earlier. The Warriors will play the Thunder again. The Nuggets will play the Mavericks again, et cetera, et cetera. But in college basketball, you really only get one shot most of the time, especially now with bigger conferences. There are only a few repeat matchups every year, and they tend to be the rivalries. When you have an 18-team Big Ten and a 20-game conference schedule. But speaking of the Big Ten, there were no Big Ten teams in my predictions this week, but a lot of Big Ten players in this game. Number one, Kansas beat number nine, North Carolina, 92-89. Kansas showing why they're the number one team in the country. North Carolina led like twice in this entire game. But it was really a crazy game because Kansas took a 20-point lead at some point. It looked like they were dominating. It was close at the beginning until the first media timeout. And then North Carolina had, I think, a 15-10 lead. And then their next lead was 89-87, I think, was the score when they led, or something like that. I know it was in the 80s when North Carolina finally retook that lead with only 2 or 3 minutes left. But Kansas, after squandering their 20-point lead, did come back, had the possessions that mattered the most, and they were able to convert on them. North Carolina on the other side, not able to in a tough environment at Fog Allen Fieldhouse. And that was a win for me. Number 11, Auburn beat number 4, Houston, 74-69. This game was really close back and forth the entire time. Those two games, early contenders for game of the year. And it's going to stay that way because it's really hard to find another game that's going to be as good as those two. With the implications, all four of these teams should probably end up in the top 10 by the end of the year based on what I've seen so far from some of A, the other top 10 teams, and B, some of the other teams that are contenders to break into the top 10. But I got this one wrong. Auburn jumps onto my one seed line in my bracket, though. Temporarily. We'll see if that holds up for tomorrow. I think it will. But then number 8, Baylor beat number 16, Arkansas, 72-67. That was after Baylor had gotten destroyed by Gonzaga on night one of the season. So in terms of them being a top 10 team, probably not actually a top 10 team, but at least close to it. And, you know, these other four teams that I talked about looks better, but I did predict that right. And then finally, number 12, Tennessee reignited their rivalry with Louisville, and they went on the road and won 77-55 at the KFC Yum Center. Louisville, I mean, it's year one of Pat Kelsey. You would have liked to see a little bit more fight out of this team in that game. They really kind of were flat in the second half, didn't have, you know, that run to get back into the game that you'd expect from a competitive team. But I don't think one game is going to really derail their season like that. It's going to be about how they respond going forward.
All right. Well, Patrick's predictions for next weekend will be posted, as always, on our website on Thursday. Let's now turn our attention to football action. Starting in college football with a look back at significant games from week 11.
Yeah, basically every game this weekend was a really close game between two good teams or just a really random upset that kind of came out of nowhere. And we'll start with one of those random upsets. Virginia beating Pitt. That really came out of nowhere. Pitt ranked number 18 in the country, only had the loss to SMU last week, who's obviously ranked 13th themselves, so a very good team. But all of a sudden, a home loss to a 4-4, a team that coming into the game was 4-4 and 2-3 in the ACC. UVA's had their moments this year where they've looked okay, but definitely have not looked at any point like a team that could beat a top 20 caliber team on the road, which, in my opinion, it says more about Pitt's lack of response from their loss more so than anything else. They really shouldn't have felt as defeated as they looked on the field, because they still could have been a prime playoff contender. I think 11-1 with only a loss to SMU would at least get you in the conversation. But they didn't come out like that, and now they've really kind of eliminated themselves from the picture. But I mean, this is the interesting thing about the 12-team playoff, right, is that 2 weeks ago, this team is viewed in a 4-team playoff scenario as, okay, they're not really a contender, but they're there if they run the table. And now this year, you're saying, okay, they lost to SMU, but if they're 11-1, they could still have a chance. But still, just the way everything changes so quickly, they went from 7-0 now to 7-2. No chance anymore. Speaking of no chance, sorry, Coach Drink, but Missouri, even though they beat Oklahoma 30-23, continue to not look like a playoff team. I mean, if this was any competent team in the SEC that Missouri had played this weekend, they would have lost the game. And that's not what top 25 teams do. That's not what top 12 teams do. There are 100% going to be more than 12 teams that are more deserving than Missouri. I could name 20 off the top of my head. I'm not going to do it, but I could very, very easily. And frankly, I don't even care about Pitt's loss or Iowa State's loss that we'll talk about in a second. I would still rather have those teams in there than the team that really is plays every single team in the SEC close. And then when they actually play a real team, they don't even put up a fight. So I'm not a huge Missouri fan, as we all know. I haven't ranked them in forever for a reason. Eye test, this team looks terrible. Rank-wise, they're ranked. That's good for them. But, you know, they're playing South Carolina on the road next week. If they really want to change the opinion and the narrative on the team, go win that game. And if you don't, you're back to the unranked team that you should be. That's kind of my message for Missouri. And speaking of the unranked team that you should be, Iowa State, their magical run is over as well. Just like Pitt, they went 7-0 and then all of a sudden lost two games in a row. Now Kansas beating number 17 Iowa State 45-36. Before the season started, this would not be a confusing result at all. I mean, this is an unranked Iowa State team heading into the year and a top 20 Kansas team with a lot of talent on it. But Kansas obviously has just faltered at every turn this season. So they end up now at 3-6, even after this win, just scraping for wins for bowl eligibility, potentially. Even though that's a long shot, they'd have to go 3-0 in the rest of the season. But the fact of the matter is, starting at the beginning of the season, you could see a path where Kansas would have been favored in every game they played. So there's nothing saying that they can't rattle off three more wins in a row. And matter of fact, they just beat Iowa State, one of the tougher opponents you can have on your schedule. So it's an interesting predicament there for Iowa State. You can say that this is a really bad loss, but the reality is, I mean, as dumb as it sounds, like the Nebraska is the best 3-9 team in the country, whatever year that was, Kansas is definitely the best 3-win team in the country, and it's not particularly close. So it's a bad loss for Iowa State, but at the same time, if you told me this was going to be the result before the season, I would say Iowa State was playing above expectations, because this, for me, would have been a 9-win team playing a 7-win team at home, and the 7-win team keeping it close. But of course, knowing what we know now, bad loss for Iowa State. They probably end this week unranked, but we'll see what happens tonight on the playoff selection show. Then you have number 12, Boise State, who beat Nevada 28-21. Boise State has started to look a little bit worse on the eye test. They're not just going out and obliterating teams anymore, but all that matters for them is that they don't suffer another loss. If their only loss is to Oregon on the season and then win the Mountain West, I think that's going to be enough to make the playoff. I mean, considering where the playoff committee has Army, that would be the only team I could really think would beat them without any help. But Army is ranked 23rd in the playoff rankings. And that's even though they already are undefeated. So I don't really know what Army can do to make up a 10 spot difference between them and Boise State and become the top five or the top ranked group of five team. It just really is hard to see without Boise State losing. I just don't see how they would make that difference up. And it feels like that's clearly what they've set up. They want Boise State in, and that's probably how it's going to happen if they can win the Mountain West. And then, you know, if it's not Boise State, then it would be the winner of the American Conference, whether that's Army or Tulane or Memphis, probably, barring all of those teams losing another game in the regular season and then winning the conference championship. But I think at least one of them will run the table, and that'll be enough. And if it's not those three, then it'll probably be UNLV who would have to beat Boise State in that conference championship game in the Mountain West. But it's really interesting to talk about now that those all get, now that those teams get an auto bid for themselves. Then talked about Alabama and LSU already, so won't go too much into it. Felt like a playoff elimination game. If I'm saying Missouri's dead at 7-2, I have to say that LSU is dead at 6-3. Like, I think that's just very illogical to not do that. So I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Even with their win over Ole Miss, it is what it is. Three losses are three losses. When you have all these teams that are undefeated so far, I mean, Indiana's still sitting here at eighth at 10-0. LSU can't make up enough of a difference that, you know, in a world where Indiana loses another game or even Penn State loses another game, they're not going to make it in over those teams when they have three losses and those other teams are going to have one or two maximum. But look, for now, LSU, they drop out. I don't think they're making it back. They'll probably still hover in the top 25 for the rest of the season, though. Then you have number nine, BYU, also undefeated. So yet another team that has a really great record that's going to be hard to pass up. BYU went on the road. They beat Utah in the Holy War. The Utah AD did not treat the press conference like anything holy. He wasn't very happy. He called out the Big 12 and the officiating crew, and he subsequently got fined for it. Now, it's really interesting to think about the backstory of this because actually he could be seen on the field talking to Kevin Marr, the leader of the officiating crew that night, saying, "This is why we got you fired." And he was referencing the fact that Kevin Marr was a former Pac-12 official, and they did, in fact, make him leave the Pac-12. So I think he was mad at some of the past dealings more so than he was really in that game. And then emotions got the best of him when, you know, you have a chance to beat a top 10 team in the country, your rival, at home, and you really feel like it was taken from you, even though I would argue it was you took it from yourselves by jumping out to a 21-10 lead and then not scoring in the second half. I would say that was really what you stole from yourself. But that was the first, or that was the almost upset of the night at the very end of the night. But the day started off with an upset. Georgia Tech beating number four Miami 28-23. I don't know what it is about this Miami team, but I think everybody kind of had the collective feeling that at some point they were going to drop a game. We just didn't know to who and didn't know when. It's just, you can't play close game after close game after close game and just expect to keep winning. It's one of those things where if you're going to keep dangling, you know, bait over the water, like a fish is eventually going to bite at it. And that's exactly what Miami did. They just kept putting their toe in the water over and over and over again in a vat of piranhas and just expected to not be bitten at any point, which is just stupid. But they can't close teams. They can close teams out fine. It's just that they let teams linger for so long that it's almost inevitable that it would come back to bite them. And it did this weekend against Georgia Tech. And I think, you know, like I said, it was going to happen. It finally did. It could have been Virginia Tech. It could have been Cal. It could have been Duke even a few weeks ago. There could have been so many losses for this team earlier in the year. And finally, it did come back to bite them. Georgia Tech gets the win. They reach bowl eligibility. And Brent Key, having a very good season, has a win over Florida State and over Miami, even though the Florida State win obviously doesn't mean much now, but it did at the time. Then you have Ole Miss, who beat Georgia. Talked about the significance of this game earlier for Georgia's side. But I do want to mention Ole Miss sitting at 16th. This was really, really, I mean, the Alabama-LSU game was a loser is out, winner stays in the conversation. Ole Miss needed this game. They needed a big win on their resume. They could not pull out that game against LSU. They really needed this game on their resume. But now they're sitting here at 8-2, and they look like a legit playoff contender. They're going to be right on that border by the time that bracket actually comes out. It'll be really interesting to see what happens. You're looking at the rankings even for this week. They're going to be ahead of LSU, who's going to drop below them because they were number 15. I don't know who else they would move ahead of this week per se, but you know they'll be in the running to do it later. Obviously, you have games like Indiana, Ohio State coming up. Alabama is going to play a few bigger games down the stretch. Tennessee, Georgia is this week. There are going to be opportunities for teams ahead of them to lose. And then Ole Miss is just going to have to hope that the playoff committee views what they've done positively. Then you have number eight, Indiana, who finally didn't murder a team. Michigan played them close, but Indiana came out with a 20-15 victory. I'd argue it's a pretty good thing for Indiana to actually have a game where they really are at stress in the fourth quarter before they take on an Ohio State, because they're not going to blow out Ohio State. That game is at least going to be close. So they have to figure out how to win close. They did in this game. We'll see if they can do it again over the next few weeks. I don't think they should need to be undefeated to make the playoff, but I'm looking at them sitting at eighth and I'm saying, how far are they going to lose if they drop that game to Ohio, or how far are they going to drop if they lose that game to Ohio State? I don't think it should be four spots, but even if it's four on the dot, they're going to miss the playoff at that point. So, or I guess they'd still be in because that would make Boise State the 11th team. But point is, the margin is a lot thinner than it should be, I would argue. And I don't think that there's any world that a 10-2 Ole Miss team should be in over an 11-1 Indiana team with only a loss to Ohio State. And yet I think that might be what we're heading for, depending on the margin of that game and depending on what Ole Miss and other teams like them do in the rest of the season. And then finally, Number 20, Colorado went on the road and beat Texas Tech 41-27. Looking at the Big 12 right now, there's a very good chance that Colorado makes the playoff. I mean, BYU has their chance. Obviously, they're undefeated. They're going to make the conference championship game. In all likelihood, it'd be very hard to see them not making it. But Colorado sitting here at 5-1, while Iowa State dropped to 4-2 this weekend. And I'm looking at it and I'm saying, give me Colorado, man. I mean, Kansas State still has that tiebreaker over Colorado, but I still think that Colorado might be a playoff team. I mean, it's a very, very legit chance that they could beat BYU in that Big 12 championship game and end up as a playoff team, which is crazy to think about, but it is definitely possible. Texas Tech, I mentioned it last week that they were 4-2 heading into this game with Colorado at 4-1. If Texas Tech had won this game, they would be sitting at 5-2 in the Big 12. Colorado would be sitting at 4-2. And Texas Tech, I think, would be second or third in the Big 12 and have pretty much be playing with house money going forward. But they did drop that game. And instead, it's going to be Colorado, who's maybe going to vault into the top 16, 17, and then keep chugging along towards a potential playoff appearance.
Yeah, and if they make that conference championship game, it doesn't matter where they're ranked. If they win it, they'll be in the playoffs. So very, very interesting college football final 3 weeks coming up before conference championship game play happens. We will keep our eye on college football, obviously, in the coming weeks. But now we will turn our attention to the NFL with review of Week 10 action.
I mentioned it already. Walk-off field goal after walk-off field goal across the league this week, starting with the Lions and the Texans. Look, this was a rough, rough game for the Texans. For the Texans' offense, I should say. C.J. Stroud struggled. He threw one touchdown, but he threw two interceptions, missed a ton of open receivers. Honestly, one of the interceptions he threw, he had Tank Dell wide open in the end zone. And instead of doing what he would normally do, which is throw it on time, throw it at the exact speed, lead his receiver away from the defender, he just threw it straight to where Tank Dell was sitting and gave the Lions safety, I forget who it was, an opportunity to catch up to it. And got it picked off in the end zone. It's hard to lose a game when the opposing quarterback throws five interceptions, but the Texans found a way to do it. I don't know what exactly to say about it. I don't know if I could call it a choke. I mean, the Lions did come out with 19 points unanswered in the second half. So it's not like they didn't do anything offensively to put themselves in a position to win. But at the same time, if you're the Texans, I mean, this is just a really bad loss to take, just one that, you know, it should have been in your hands. It was in your hands, and you still didn't come away with the victory. And then the Steelers also beat the Commanders by less than a possession. The Steelers, though, had a walk-off touchdown. Commanders leading 27-20 heading into, or excuse me, 27-21 heading into the fourth quarter. And like I said, Russell Wilson had that drive to bring them down the field. I'd argue that at this point, the Commanders win over the Bears, and then this loss to the Steelers kind of just trade out. I mean, you lose one close game, you win one. At the same time, the worry with Washington is that they haven't beaten a team above 500 all year long. They are 7-0 against teams under 500. Now that the Bears are under 500 as well, they are 0-3 against teams 500 above. So take that how you will. Not a great sign for them. They're going to need to beat some of those teams going forward. They're going to play the Eagles here soon. I think next week, actually. So that's their first real test. They're going to play them again later in the year. Those are the games they need to actually win. If you want to be a true playoff team, even if they make the playoff, but they can't really beat anybody good, they're not going to go very far. So they got to figure it out. But you know what? Anything this season, I would argue, for the Commanders is just kind of is just the gravy on top. I mean, this team picked number two overall in last year's draft. It's not like they were supposed to be any good. So the fact that they're even in this position where we can talk about them being a potential fraudulent contender, like calling them a pretender, I mean, they're happy to be in the contender versus pretender discussion. This team was supposed to be, you know, picking again in the top 10 probably. But credit to Jaden Daniels and that team for turning it around, obviously. Like I said, they still have some real tests going forward. Could potentially still miss the playoffs, even though they looked like a lock when they were 7-2 after that win over the Bears. But speaking of the playoffs, the Niners beat the Buccaneers 23-20. The Bucs, they continue their slide. You know, it's been really rough with them without having Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Godwin obviously out for the season. Mike Evans has been out a few weeks and then just banged up in general, as it tends to happen with these Bucs receivers. Honestly, they both had their fair share of injuries, but the Niners getting healthier. Christian McCaffrey coming back in this game. didn't necessarily look like the old vintage Christian McCaffrey whatsoever, but at the same time, he had six catches for 60 some odd yards. Brock Purdy threw for, I think, 350 yards. George Kittle caught a touchdown. Ricky Pearsall caught his first touchdown. Juwan Jennings looked good. They don't have Ayuk, but Deebo Samuel's still there. And then Jennings and Pearsall are kind of trying to replace Ayuk's production, I guess you could say, in the aggregate, if you want to use the Moneyball term. But that's pretty much what the Niners are relying on. And then their strong defense to just keep doing its thing. The fact of the matter is, they're in a wide open NFC West. The Cardinals currently lead that division, but Niners aren't far behind. And frankly, the Cardinals are going to their bye week at 6-4. The Niners, all they need to do is win next week, and all of a sudden they're tied for first place in that division. So interesting to note there in the NFC West. Meanwhile, the Buccaneers are now down two games to the Falcons. They already were, but the Saints pulled off the upset this week. Derek Carr, for some reason, just won't let New Orleans get a lottery pick or get a top five pick. The Saints won 20-17. It sends the Falcons to 6-4, a prime opportunity for the Falcons to build even more distance between them and the Buccaneers, but they weren't quite able to do it. Then you have the Chiefs. They moved to 9-0 on the season with their victory over the Broncos. I talked about it. They blocked a field goal at the end of the game to win this one. The Broncos were up 14-3 at some point. Chiefs scored 13 unanswered and then got that blocked field goal. Only would have been a 35. It was a 35-yard chip shot field goal. So the Broncos were definitely going to make that one if it got up over the line, but it didn't. And now instead of having a 6-4 Broncos team and an 8-1 Chiefs team, we have a 9-0 Chiefs team and a 5-5 Broncos team. Don't think the Broncos are really playoff contenders anyway, but you know, it still could have been, that could have maybe been the win that really, really makes them believe that they are a playoff team. Obviously, if they had handed the Chiefs their first loss of the year, but we'll have to wait another week to see if Kansas City will actually ever lose this season. Then you have the Eagles just dominated the Cowboys. The closest the Cowboys ever were to really having any momentum in this game was when CeeDee Lamb went across the middle of the field, had a slant that was thrown near him, but he did not stop for the ball because he couldn't see it because of the ridiculously large glare in AT&T Stadium. I just find it ironic that Mike McCarthy is using a sun shield in his press conference so that the sun doesn't get in his eyes, but the Cowboys players can't do anything about that in the end zone during a game, and Jerry Jones is still being stubborn about it. But, you know, that is the way of Jerry Jones. So the Cowboys fall to 3-6. Speaking of being stubborn, they're not really trying to win any games, it seems like, if you want to talk about stubborn. But the Eagles move to 7-2, looking way better. Like I said, play the Commanders soon. I think it is this week, but I don't want to, I don't quote me on that. So the Eagles have some important games coming up for sure and looking good so far heading into those games. And speaking of divisional rivals that have been prominent over the last few years, the Ravens beat the Bengals 35-34 on Thursday Night Football. I mean, this is your classic back and forth Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson game, which tends to end up in Lamar winning those matchups, I think literally 10 times out of 11 at this point. I think Lamar is 10-1 he's 10-1 against the Bengals in his career, I think. And Joe Burrow has probably played in maybe 6 or 7 or 8 of those games. But look, Lamar's doing his thing. Looks like a contender to repeat for MVP. I don't really know who I would put above him right now. I mean, it's very, very hard. You know, the Chiefs are 9-0, but Mahomes is not putting up MVP numbers whatsoever. Jaden Daniels had his run, but he's definitely not, I don't think, really in that conversation. Jared Goff was in that conversation, but throwing 5 picks in a week when your whole name of your game is taking care of the ball doesn't help at all. So I don't really know who else is in it other than, I mean, his teammate, Derrick Henry. I think that could be the second place guy. They could go 1-2 in the MVP race, but that's something to discuss way later in the season. For now, more important that the Bengals, they need to claim a victory over a better team. I mean, I keep talking about this. This is the problem of them digging themselves in these holes early in the season. It's really hard to dig yourself out because you just have to beat good team after good team rather than splitting with the good teams and just taking care of the bad ones. And then the Rams, they were at 4-4, could have gotten within a half a game of the division lead with the Cardinals on bye next week, but they lost at home to the Dolphins 23-15. Miami's offense, I won't say coming alive, but looking a little bit better in this game now that they have Tua back and Tyreek and Jalen Waddle. Tyreek obviously dealing with an injury in this game, though, too. So a little bit of a muted offensive performance from the Dolphins, but their defense stepped up, forced 5 Rams field goals, never allowed the Rams to convert in the red zone. And that was the thing that ended up biting the Rams there. They just didn't ever get aggressive enough to go for it on fourth down. Not saying that they should have. And I mean, maybe one situation they had, they probably could have, but when it was fourth and goal from the three late in the game or the four-ish. But other than that, I mean, look, they just kind of got shut down by the Dolphins defense in the red zone. Bend, don't break worked perfectly, and the Rams fall to 4-5 on the season.
All right, that wraps up our look at the NFL and our look at football in general. Let's change gears and move to basketball action, starting with the NBA from last week.
Looking at the East, it's the Cavs and the Celtics leading the way. The number of above 500 teams in the East somehow shrank from last week to, to this week. Last week, I think it was four teams that were at 500 or above. This week, it's just three. It's the Cavs at 12-0, which is crazy. The Celtics at 9-2, and then the Pacers at 5-5 are the third seed in the East right now. Just crazy to think about. You even look at the next three teams. The Magic are at 5-6. That's without Paolo Banchero for the last few games. But they're figuring it out. They've won two in a row. The Nets are at 5-6. They're not missing anybody significant. They just don't have a roster that's supposed to be this competitive. And yet they are. But then you have the Knicks at 4-5 and the Heat at 4-5, also expanding those 6 and 7 spots, the actual playoff contenders there that you think will be in it at the end of the year. But again, it's all about the bottom of the East. Once again, it's the two teams that are outside of the playoffs that are typically, or have been at least in the past, part of the big three in the East. The Sixers sitting at 2-7 and the Bucks sitting at 2-8. The Sixers did get Paul George back this week, so that was obviously a boost for them, but hasn't turned into many wins on the court yet. I mean, I guess 2-7 is better than 1-8, and they did win their last game. But, you know, they played the Lakers in Embiid's return. They didn't win. They're not looking great. You know, they're lucky. I'm just going to say that the rest of the East isn't doing very well, because right now they could be buried pretty down low there. But instead, because the rest of this conference just isn't very good and isn't very deep, they don't really have to worry about anything. I mean, all they need to do is really play, like, you probably need to play at 500 for the rest of the year and they'd still be in the play-in game. I think five games under 500 might do it in the East. But if they play above 500, if they play the level that they're supposed to as a contender with Tyrese Maxey and Paul George and Joel Embiid, you know, they'll be easily in the 5-6 seed range. Obviously, though, you can always say that it seems like it's too early to start talking about the playoffs in the NBA, but do the math. The Cavs have played 12 games. That means they've played more than a seventh of their season already. I know that's not a big number, but you know, the middle of the season in the NBA really creeps up on teams a lot quicker than they think it actually does. And then by that time, when teams are really starting to deal with those injuries, especially a team like the Sixers that has a ton of injury prone players in general, it's an issue. Now for the Bucks, they're fully healthy. They just can't win games. I mean, I don't really know what's going wrong with this team, but it's not showing up on the scoreboard, and it is showing up on the scoreboard that they're not playing well at all. But the team that we've seen and become accustomed to seeing with Giannis just hasn't been the same this year. I think frankly, if you really want to point fingers, you're probably looking at Doc Rivers and Darvin Ham leading the coaching staff and looking at their past few coaching performances and saying, are those really the guys we're leaning on here? And, you know, the answer is, well, yes, but is it a good idea? Probably not. Adrian Griffin and Doc Rivers have now, I think earlier this week, it was posted that they now had the same amount of games coached. The Bucks fired Adrian Griffin after the Bucks started the season 30-13 last year. And Doc Rivers' record, while Adrian Griffin was 30-13 through his first 43 games, I think Doc Rivers was something like 20-23. Something like that. So yeah, not exactly what you want to see at all. It was a terrible decision when they fired Adrian Griffin last year. And I said it back then and I'll say it again now. And it continues to look like a terrible decision. Then moving on to the West, where there's a lot more sunshine and rainbows in this conference. The OKC Thunder are at 9-2. That is the best record in the West. Of course, same record as the Celtics, been then 2.5 games back in a theoretical battle for home court with the Cavs. The Suns are at 8-2 as well. Kevin Durant's looking like an MVP contender. He did get injured, though, so we'll see how the Suns deal with that moving forward. The Warriors and the Cavs had a battle again that actually meant something for the first time in a while. Obviously, both of those two teams have been pretty good over the last few years, but both of them at the top of their conferences, really for the first time since the Steph Curry, Clay, or sorry, the Steph, KD, and Klay, and Iguodala and Draymond Green days of the Warriors, and you know, the LeBron James days of the Cavs. So it's been a while since those two teams were both not, they definitely have been relevant, but it's been a while since they were both championship contenders, and it really feels like this year they are. And speaking of championship contenders, after everything that's been said about this Nuggets team, they finally woke up. They started the season 2-2 with an overtime win over the Nets and a close win against the Raptors. I might have flipped which one was overtime, but they were both close anyway. But now all of a sudden, this is the team we're accustomed to seeing. They didn't get the revenge on the Timberwolves and they fell to 2-3, but they've now won 5 in a row. And they're now sitting at 7-3. So the Nuggets back into form, exactly what you would expect from a championship caliber team. Then you have the Rockets at 7-4 and the Grizzlies at 7-4. So both of those two younger teams making a splash. The Grizzlies had an interesting clash with the Lakers over the weekend, or I guess middle end of last week, that Ja Morant ended up besting LeBron in. LeBron and the Lakers are at 6-4, though, still, so a good record for them. Timberwolves also at 6-4, and then the Clippers and the Kings at 6-5, with the Mavs at 5-5 and the Spurs at 5-6. And this is why I'm saying that there are 12 playoff teams in the West. All the way down to the Spurs, I really feel like these teams are all playoff teams again. Portland and Utah are the only teams I don't feel like are contenders. And the Pelicans have lost 5 in a row to drop to 3-8. I guess they're the ones that are kind of taking themselves out of the conversation. They were definitely in it at the beginning of the year. If they keep playing like this, maybe I won't exactly have the same faith that I did in them earlier. But the West looking really good overall, looking really deep as always.
All right, well, let's stay with basketball, but finally move to our first look at college basketball action with review of the start of the 24-25 season.
It's been a week and a half, and you know, there haven't been many crazy matchups yet. This week is really where you start to get some bigger matchups, and I'll talk about it when I get to those teams. But North Florida, the annual, what random team is going to pull off an upset that makes everybody turn their heads? It was North Florida this year. They beat South Carolina 74-71 on opening night. Now, interestingly enough, North Florida was an 18-point underdog in this game. They also beat Georgia Tech in their last game as a 15-point underdog. They now take on Georgia tonight as a 10.5-point underdog. Do not sleep on the Ospreys. If they're able to win this game against Georgia, this is not only a team that we're looking at as, you know, a potential, you know, auto bid team in their conference. If you have 3 wins against power conference teams in your non-conference schedule, I don't care what conference you're in, you're a contender to be in the play, to be in the tournament as an at-large. I mean, this is a team that could probably, you know, have like a McNeese or High Point like, or a McNeese from last season type season, and lose their conference tournament game, or lose in their conference championship at some point, and all of a sudden you could still be talking about them as a team that gets a tournament bid. Way too far down the line to talk about that, but just keep your eyes on North Florida and the ASUN if they can beat Georgia, especially if they can beat Georgia tonight. And then the first three big matchups of the season all came on opening night. Number 6 Gonzaga beat number 8 Baylor 101-63, just flat out demolished them. I talked about it a little bit in the weekend predictions. Baylor did bounce back later in the week, but a really big result for Gonzaga there to put their foot down early in the season and home. Then UCF beat number 13 Texas A&M 64-61. Good job by UCF there to get that home win over a top 15 team. It's going to go a long way for their resume, especially in the Big 12 where it's hard to get wins to come by. You know, this is also when it just tells them as a team, hey, look, we can beat teams that people think are more talented than us on paper. We can really, you know, make something happen here this season in the Big 12, which is probably going to have like 12 teams in the tournament because that conference is ridiculous. And then Ohio State beat number 19, Texas 80-72. Speaking of 12 teams in the tournament, the Big 10 just has bubble team after bubble team after bubble team. Every team in this conference feels like it should be somewhere between a 7 to a 10 seed. But these are the types of wins that are going to take some of those teams out of that bracket and move them up into the 6 or the 5 or the 4 seed range. And Ohio State, they've done it now. They've beaten Texas. That was a really good win early in the year that they've picked up. They now go on the road to take on Texas A&M that I just mentioned. If they can, that's a ranked versus ranked game right there. It's going to be a quad one game for Ohio State since it's on the road anyway. If they can sweep the state of Texas in these two games, the Buckeyes are probably going to be looking at a top 10 to 15 ranking next to their name by next Monday. So that'll be a really interesting game for them. Speaking of big games, number 1, Kansas beat UNC 892-89. Talked about it in my predictions, but this one very, very relevant because Kansas now plays in the championship, Champions Classic tonight. The field is weaker than it normally is. Well, the field is the same as every year, but the rankings are weaker. Obviously, this is the event with Kansas, Michigan State, Duke, and Kentucky. This year, it's number one, number seven, number 23, and an unranked team. Unlike prior years where, you know, all four of these teams have been in the top 10 sometimes. But Kansas takes on Michigan State, the unranked Spartans team. It's a big game still for Kansas, though. I mean, obviously, after this win over UNC, you don't think that they would drop a game to Michigan State, but Michigan State still has enough talent to at least compete with them. And, you know, early on in the season, you never know what can happen in a close game. So Kansas needs to play well tonight if they're going to take that victory. We'll just see what happens with that when it does. I think they're going to win, but, I mean, we'll see. Then New Mexico beat number 22 UCLA, 72-64. UCLA was the third highest ranked team in the Big Ten heading into the season, heading into this week. I think at this point, they're like the seventh or eighth best team, according to people's perceptions, because these teams, I'm telling you, are just that close to each other in the Big Ten. I mean, it takes like one or two wins to completely change the perception of a team in that conference. VCU beat Boston College 80-55, just a dominant win for a quality team in the A-10. The A-10 looking like a two-bid league because on the same night that VCU beat Boston College, Dayton beat Northwestern 71-66. Northwestern beat Dayton last year. It was a big win for them at home. It ended up being a quad one win because Dayton ended up in the top 25 of the net. And this is going to be the same thing for Dayton this year, in my opinion. It'll at least be a really high quad two win for the Flyers, but it'll go a long way towards their tournament hopes, especially if Northwestern can stay on that tournament bubble and end up on the right side of it. Then you have Memphis, who beat UNLV 80-74. They also beat Missouri earlier in the week, so Memphis looking good to start the season there. Nevada beat Washington 63-53. The new teams in the Big Ten, they are not helping the old teams. The old teams are looking at Washington and UCLA saying, man, what are you guys doing? We win in this conference. The Big Ten had started off 22-0, I think, as a conference before Friday night, and then you had Nevada beat Washington on Saturday. You had Dayton, who beat Northwestern on Saturday. And then the UCLA loss was the first one of the season on Friday night. So ton of Big Ten losses. That was actually another thing that happened later in the week that I'll get to in a second. Then you have the three games I talked about in my predictions. Auburn beat Houston, Baylor beat Arkansas, and Tennessee beat Louisville. And then that Big Ten loss that I was talking about, Wake Forest beat Michigan 72-70. They might have only beaten Michigan by the difference of a puddle on the court. But the fact of the matter is, really close game between two tournament teams. Honestly, people think these two teams are on the bubble. I wouldn't be shocked if by the end of the year, both of these teams were in the top 25 and both of these teams were top six or seven seeds. I am personally a lot higher on both of these teams than most people are on either of them. But Wake Forest was picked third in the ACC preseason media poll. So clearly there's some hype around this team. Obviously, Duke and North Carolina are in a class of their own in the ACC, but Wake Forest is the team that even the conference media thinks is going to fill that void behind them. The ACC is not going to be a two-team league, is not going to be a two-bid league, especially with the fact that the Pac-12 doesn't even exist anymore. So someone in the ACC is going to have to take up a few of those last tournament spots, at least a third and a fourth spot. And I think that Wake Forest is that team that's going to easily take up that void and probably be a lot higher than people think. And then in terms of Michigan, they were picked to finish somewhere in the middle of that weird clump in the Big Ten of, I think, probably 8th to 10th, somewhere in that range. But I just think that that team is a lot better than what they got credit for from the media in the preseason. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be top 25 all year, but they should be hanging around that border. And we'll see what happens this week because Michigan plays TCU. So they have another matchup where they can actually prove themselves. And then finally, number six, Gonzaga beat Arizona State 88-80. You could argue that game shouldn't have been close, but early in the season, not much separation between any of these teams.
All right, that wraps our look back at college basketball, our first look back at college basketball for the year. It also wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, November 19th, where we will once again look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, look back at college football in the NFL in week 12 and week 11, respectively, and talk again about basketball with two leagues to talk about, both the NBA and college basketball in full force now. All of that content will be on that next podcast. But in the meantime, please be sure to check out Patrick's additional content, including our college football rankings, which are posted weekly throughout the season on Monday mornings, Patrick's weekly college basketball bracket updates, which will be posted on Wednesdays throughout the season, and of course, Patrick's picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted, as always, on Thursday. You can find all that content on social media at 4thand24 on Twitter/X and Instagram, and some of that content on our website, 4thand24.com. That's the number 4, THAND, the number 24.com. Thank you for listening.